The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Welcome to Commentary from the Edge. I'm your host, Elbert Lewis. Today, my rant is entitled Third World America. And when I say Third World America, I don't mean the whole of the United States of America. I'm referring to the urban enclaves inside some of our largest cities that are populated largely by minorities in the lower socioeconomic groups. This rant came to me a couple of days ago, when I was listening to a talk show, I heard something that really shocked me. I mean, I nearly fell off of the stool at my breakfast bar. I was listening to an urban talk show, and one of the callers called in and stated that the Honorable Minister Farrakhan, leader of the Nation of Islam, stated that the Second Amendment is obsolete and that civilians should not own firearms. And I said, what? Surely this caller is talking out of his behind. So I quick ran to my computer. I had to wait for it to boot up, to log on, and I was just chomping at the bit. I was just in disbelief. Well, as I thought, the caller had not gotten it right. In fact, it was even worse. The Minister Farrakhan was railing against the gun violence in the black community, and he was advocating the gangbangers get together and form some kind of internal policing agency to deal with the gun violence. And I thought, is this man out of his mind? That's like inviting the foxes to get together to protect the hen house. And I thought, what in the world? What is this man talking about? Or who has possessed his mind and body that these words are coming out of this man's mouth? Because for years, for decades, Minister Farrakhan was someone I thought was a radical. He was always preaching about conspiracy theories that white people were oppressing black people and other minorities. And we had to protect ourselves both economically and physically against the tyranny of the majority. And what is more basic to protecting yourself or being independent than being able to bear firearms to protect yourself and your family? And here he is advocating armed criminals band together and have even more sway in the urban communities. It would be the law of the jungle. What? Has the whole world turned upside down after the Newtown shooting? Before I go on with this rant, let me backtrack and tell you why I think this is completely insane. Let's go back to the time of slavery. The slave owners realized that to keep people enslaved, there were two or three or maybe four tenets that had to be strictly adhered to. Number one, you cannot let people who are slaves or in bondage have strong family ties. That's why marriage was pretty much frowned upon. Families were not kept intact. At any time, the father, the mother, any one of the children could be sold off. They could be used or abused in any way by the slave master, and they had no say in the matter. Another tenet, education. You took your life in your hands as a slave if you tried to learn how to read or otherwise educate yourself. And so it was strictly forbidden for slaves to read and to be educated, because if someone's educated, they can have hopes and dreams, or they can read and see that what you're doing is wrong. They can know that there's something else out in the world. And so slave owners did not want black people educated. The third tenet of slavery, religion. They pushed religion big time. They were free to worship a god, the god of their oppressor. The slave owners were more than happy for slaves to be complacent about their predicament and wait for a better life after death. Now, I'm sure that the early slaves, if you were first generation, if you were one of the captives, that you maintained your own ideology, you know, worshiping stone gods or tree gods or whatever. But eventually, the descendants of slaves were free to practice the religion, Christianity, the religion of their enslavers. And last but not least, we come to the fourth tenet of slavery, the inability to protect yourself and your family from harm, living at the mercy of men with guns who didn't even consider you human. Trust me, there was no way in hell that slave owners would allow slaves to have weapons, and especially not firearms. It was bad enough they might have had the implements of their work, of their labor, but firearms, never, ever. Well, let's fast forward to modern times. We come now to the Jim Crow era. And because the inability to take part in a larger American society, blacks pretty much built their own little self-contained communities within America. And the statistics, the vital statistics, were pretty much equal as far as crime rates and graduation rates and marriage rates, and also things were fairly on a par with the larger white community. And then came the civil rights era, and all of a sudden, blacks had a lot more freedom. We could live pretty much in the white communities. We could go to white doctors and other white professionals. We can become patrons of amusement parks and restaurants and hotels and all these other facets of American life. I recall as a 13 or 14 year old, somewhere around there, when the Coney Island Amusement Park near where I live was desegregated, and I got to ride a horse. Forget about the roller coasters and all the other amusement rides. I got to ride a horse, and it was like I was like one of the Buffalo Soldiers or something like that. I got to actually ride a horse. I would go downtown and shine shoes on Fridays and Saturdays. I would work my butt off just so I would have enough money to ride the bus out to Coney Island so I could ride the horses. And it was amazing. But a strange thing happened along the way in the civil rights movement. We saw a clear demarcation where you have two kinds of black people. You have, on one hand, the black people who shied away from competing with the white population and basically settled for a life of dependency in welfare programs. And with that group of people, you see generational dependency on welfare. And you also see the first three tenets of slavery being self-imposed in that group. Lack of family ties, lower education, and rampant religion. The other type of black people are the ones who are productive, who do not fear competition with the larger white community, and in spite of residual racism, have done fairly well. And in fact, now we have a African-American president. And for those who might say he's biracial, that's nonsense. In America, there is the one-drop rule. If you have one drop of black blood, you're black. Two kinds of black people. And it seems that this one class of black people are pretty much congregated in the inner city. Some of our big cities, Detroit, Chicago, Newark, Philadelphia, Compton, you know, all the big cities have these large black populations of the other type of black person who is not well educated, who is not competitive with the larger society. And it seems that these enclaves are becoming sort of a third world America. They receive a lot of federal aid, federal welfare benefits, Section 8 housing, free medical care, food stamps that is comparable to foreign aid. If you look at some of the attitudes in those inner cities, up to 70% of women never marry. Up to 60 to 70% of children are born out of wedlock. Only 50% graduate from high school, the boot camp of life. Religion is predominant, almost a church on every corner in the black community. And it's kind of like, of their own volition, this group of non-competitive, non-productive black people are emulating the lifestyle that the slave owners forced on our ancestors, with the exception, of course, that they don't have to work in the cotton fields. The other type of black person, the competitive ones, have left the inner city, including yours truly, are living in the suburbs, you know, next door to the productive white people, and get along just fine. Let's fast forward to recent events. We have this tragic situation in Newtown, Connecticut, the Sandy Hook Elementary School, where some nutcase killed 20 kids, and all of a sudden, we turning the whole country upside down. Now, there are kids killed every day in this country, most of them black. For a fact, we're, 13% of the population? But we're 49% of the murder victims. And so, There is no national uproar about, 500 murders in Chicago, 300 or 400 in Detroit, who knows how many in New Orleans and the cities around LA. But the thing that really shocked me is the divergence in attitude and response to what happened in Sandy Hook. White people, productive black people, are rushing out and buying firearms at an alarming rate. I tried to get into a gun show a couple of weeks ago, and I go to this gun show every couple of months. I pulled off the highway, made a couple of turns, and I was approaching the convention center, more than 15 minutes from my house, and I was shocked. There was a line of cars waiting to make a left turn off of the road that it's located on. I looked over, there was a line of people out the door, down the sidewalk, and halfway across one of the parking lots. It was crazy. I just kept driving. I didn't even attempt to get in. Now, the only reason I was there is because I think those knuckleheads in Washington are going to do something crazy like ban 30-round magazines. And I have 6 or 7, but I thought I'd go and see if I can scarf up 5 or 6 more just because they may be banned. But I couldn't even get in. Contrast that. Mainstream white community, productive black people going out and buying as many firearms, as much ammunition as they can afford or that's available. In other words, being self-reliant. Contrast that with the other type of black people. Recently in my town, they had this turn your firearms in day, and they did it in 3 communities. Every single community they did it in was largely predominantly African-American working class. And they were offering $100 gift cards for any firearm. And they had it on the news. And some of these firearms I recognize because I'm a gun enthusiast. Some of those guns are worth hundreds, if not maybe $1,000. And they were turning them in for $100 gift certificate. They can take them to a gun show and get 3 or 4, maybe 5 times that much. And the people turning them in were obviously law-abiding, probably working people. They weren't gangbangers, drug dealers, common criminals. Oh no, they're going to keep their guns. And it just seems to me that it's indicative. This is just one more aspect of these communities that is pushing them towards a third world state. Because look at the third world countries. They're largely uneducated. They're not allowed by their governments to own firearms. So they are helpless in the face of marauding criminals and revolutionaries and crazed jihadis. Armed men come through and they pretty much take what they want. They rob and they rape and they kill and they burn and they pillage. The people are unarmed and they have no recourse but to take it. But isn't that pretty much what's happening in some of the urban areas in this country? That they're pretty much been taken over by gangs of thugs who own illegal firearms? Isn't it pretty much the same thing? And now all of the so-called reverends, even Minister Farrakhan and all of the civil rights advocates and leaders, and even our president, are preaching against the ownership of firearms because they say they're a danger. But aren't these armed thugs, drug dealers, burglars, thieves, robbers, murderers, aren't they more of a danger? They're advocating that black people disarm themselves. And guess who is blindly following along? It's the black people in the lower socioeconomic groups. Now, their message has to be directed at black people because white people is not going to pay attention to what Farrakhan says or these black civil rights leaders or even our black president. So their message is directed pretty much at black people. And if the black people living in urban areas disarm themselves even more than they are now, or put themselves at the mercy of armed and organized thugs, as Minister Farrakhan suggests, they would have self-imposed the fourth tenet of bondage on themselves. They would have made themselves completely vulnerable and easy victims. Now, some of you might be starting to think that I'm being a bit alarmist and maybe even paranoid, but there is one more reason, one overarching reason why black people, poor or well off, should never, ever disarm themselves. And that reason is, eventually, if we keep going down the economic road we're going, our government spending money hand over fist that we don't have, eventually, this system will collapse under the deficit and the debt. And when that happens, the people in charge, the white ruling class, will not want to shoulder the blame for that collapse, for that failure. And they will be looking for somebody to blame. And trust me, black folks will be an easy target because even though numerically there are more white people receiving benefits, welfare has a black face in this country. Crime has a black face. And now that we have a African-American spendthrift in the White House, we see deficit spending and a ballooning debt has a black face. If the system fails, guess who's going to be blamed for that? And I don't want to be around when that happens if I am disarmed and defenseless. Because most white people are decent people, but there are crazies and bigots out there. And there will be vigilante action because there will be the demagogues out there screaming that it's all the fault of all the social programs, all the social spending, and that has a black face. If anyone doubts what I'm saying, ask some elderly Japanese American that was around during World War II. Prior to the attack on Pearl Harbor, the United States was the major exporter of oil in the world. We sold millions of gallons of crude oil and hundreds of thousands of tons of scrap metal to the Empire of Japan during the 1930s when they were rampaging through the Far East. Remember the Rape of Nanking, where they invaded China and sacked the city of Nanking, killed over 100,000 Chinese? The killing and raping went on for weeks. The United States government allowed the corporations to dutifully sell oil and scrap metal to the Japanese, even though they knew what they were doing with it. It wasn't until the Japanese invaded French Indochina and took assets away from the French that the Americans saw fit to suspend the sale of crude oil, scrap metal, and even froze all their foreign assets. It was then that the Japanese government decided to attack America at Pearl Harbor. And then the government of the United States turned on the Japanese citizens living in this country, rounded them all up, trucked them off to concentration camps, and they were defenseless, unarmed, and defenseless to do anything about it. So for those reasons I have outlined, no law-abiding black person in America should ever give up a gun or be defenseless against a government or their own kind who would take what they've worked so hard for, and especially the blacks living in urban America, because that gun may be the only thing standing between you and third world status in America. Until next time, I'm your host, Elbert Lewis, from The Edge.